Thank you, Bob. As you can see, Bob is our partner with the Manure Analysis Proficiency Program, and there are a lot of similarities between that program and the MAP program and the ELP program that Bob runs. We have the three replicated samples, and we look at laboratory precision in addition to the traditional accuracy. This is the only manure proficiency program in North America. I'm kind of proud of that. And I would like to spend a little time on the program history and how we prepare the samples. And I will spend some time talking about the variability, and I hope we have time to talk about a new graphical report that we sent out a couple of years ago and we've been using. And we probably won't have time for future projects, but we'll see how it goes. Sometimes I talk fast. In 1989, the Minnesota legislature gave us the authority to certify laboratories for both soil and manure testing, and we got started pretty quickly on the soil testing. The manure testing, there was a little bit of delay. Jan Jarman got the program going in 1996, and she had 16 labs certified that first year. Now, there's a difference between certification and proficiency. The labs that are certified, and we'll talk about this later, have to meet a little higher performance. But in 2003, we received a grant, and Bob was with us and worked a lot with us in the setup of the program from the grant that we received with the EPA. And another watershed event was the publication of the Recommended Methods of Manure Analysis. This was the first really cookbook or methods manual for manure testing, and we'd had soil testing manuals for a number of decades before that. So we're a little bit farther behind with the manure testing program than with soil testing. And then Bob was quite instrumental. In 2010, the University of California, Davis published the second manual. Here's the standard one, the one published in 2003 by the University of Wisconsin. John Peters was the editor of that one. And this is the one that Bob and a number of other people from the University of California, Davis worked on. Both of these are available on the internet. There's no charge for them. The California Analytical Methods Manual has a few tests that were not available in the first one, and it also has some suggestions for getting a representative sample from your little sample container. Those of you that are in the lab business, we suggest you are quite familiar with both of them. The MAP labs are mostly in the United States. Typically, we have about 70 or 75 each year, usually around 7 or 8 in Canada and the rest of the United States. I'll spend just a few minutes talking about sample preparation. In my naive early days, I thought you just take a cow pie and put it in a bottle, and I found out it was a little more complicated. This is an instrument. It's a vertical cutter mixer. It's used in the food industry, but all our samples are prepared at this at some point. And you'll notice the frost on the sides. Earlier in the program, I introduced some dry ice. I thought that helped a little bit. Later on, I kind of stopped doing that. But if you are struggling with something in the lab, milling it up, dry ice might help. But then the further sample preparation depends on the manure consistency. So if it's very dry manure, kind of like after it's run through that machine, it might be like a spice you'd find in your kitchen cabinet. I can put it in a cement mixer. If it's a liquid manure, I'll do it with a prop mixer. But the slurry manure has really been a struggle for me, and it wasn't until this past year when I had an intern that could mix with a mortar mixing hole that I found a way to do that. So we'll have some pictures of that in just a minute. So like I said, this dry manure, when it's pulverized through that vertical cutter mixer, is very fine, like maybe oregano or something you might find in your kitchen cupboard. And mix it up in a 12 cubic foot cement mixer. Usually what I do is fill about 50 bottles and then let the mixer spin for another 5 or 10 minutes while I put the caps on them, then do another 50 bottles. For each sample set I send out, I fill 280 bottles. Here's the prop mixer we use for the liquid manure. And this is a tank, it's a 100-gallon tank. And if you're mixing stuff, no matter what size, and you want to keep the suspended solids out, I think these baffles are helpful. So that might be something that a laboratory could do if they wanted to mix up liquid samples before pulling them out, is maybe try experimenting with putting baffles in. This was the problem I had with slurry manure. And just a few minutes after taking it out of that RoboCoop mixer, it started separating. And you can imagine it takes maybe an hour and a half or 2 hours to fill 280 bottles. So this just did not work very well. And we did not have many samples from, say, 20% total solids to 35 or 40% in the MAP program. Wow, we went backwards. So what I found out is I could have a mortar hole, and that's just one of those with the holes in it. It looks like a regular hole, and have my assistant work the hole while I filled the bottles, and that worked pretty well. So each sample exchange we send out two per year has 9 bottles. But there are 3 manure samples with triple replicates, and they're set up for day 1, day 2, and day 3. And these would be 3 different manures, and then the same 3 and the same 3. So they're done on different days. Now, Bob's program, they just take from the same container, so there's no doubt what the replicates are. Here, there's a little bit of uncertainty, but it's manure, and, you know, 3 bottles are liquid and 6 are solid, and you can probably tell by looking at them. Sometimes you can just lift them up and tell what's what, but it is not quite as obvious what the replicates are. I don't know why I keep going backwards here. The statistical program we use is R, and I've gotten ahead of myself because I'm having trouble with this. But you'll see some graphs, and I put these bigger ones up here. These aren't the actual graphs, but this represents the 3 results. So this would be 1 result, the 2nd result, and the 3rd result that the lab submits. And this circle is the mean of their 3 results. And that'll be quite important when we look at their accuracy or bias. The graphs that I send out, the results are in 2 colors. Most of them are this light lime green, but each graph or each lab gets their own graphical report, and their lab results will be shown in the dark blue so they can tell exactly where they sit. Boy, I tell you, I should put a regular mouse on here. I'm going the wrong way. There we go. I'm not used to using this. So here's our median value you'll see on the graphs. Grant Cardin talked about the 2.5 MAD units from the median. So here we have the median. This would be 2.5 MAD units from the median. And these dashed lines would be 4 MAD units from the median. So these would be the results by all the competing laboratories, and then the lab that received this report would have their results show up in the dark blue. So here's an actual report, and I hope, I don't know if those in the back can see it, but here's the blue one for this particular lab, and you can see the variability between the 3 replicates goes from here to here. So the lab can look very easily at these and see where they sit. Now this one's a little bit harder to see. This lab's results were right here. And because of this extreme outlier, the 2.5 MAD units and the 4 MAD units are so compressed, it's just basically a line. But here it is right there. And the reason it doesn't show up on this map is it's way outside the 4 MAD units. Here's another one with phosphorus. And this one is right in the middle, but you'll see there's quite a large range. So this one would have been okay as far as accuracy and wouldn't have had any points deducted or any flag. But for precision, it would have been flagged for precision and would have lost points for poor precision. I want to talk a little bit about the test variability. And as Bob mentioned, with the ELP program, well, we can evaluate both their accuracy or their bias between the laboratories, but also the precision within a laboratory. And Bob mentioned the Horowitz trumpet, that as you have low concentrations, you'll see a curve like this, and you get higher concentrations, there's less variability. Now, what I'm doing for variability is probably more similar to what Bob was talking about. I call it the no flag percent. It's how far away a lab can be flagged, or a lab can have results while being flagged. So, for example, if it's a 10% no flag percent or no flag percent variability, it would be plus or minus 10%, and they wouldn't be flagged. And we have some that, like 10% is pretty good. We have some over 100, which we'll take a look at in a minute. So phosphorus, you can see this follows pretty nicely, the Horowitz trumpet. A couple of high ones here, and I think this is where I did a poor job of mixing. Copper, again, is another nice one with a good trumpet shape. And zinc also. Oops, I want to go back here just a minute. Well, you wouldn't think I'd have so much trouble with a computer. Okay, so potassium, surprisingly, there really isn't too much of the Horowitz trumpet. Total nitrogen, I think, is very interesting. There's 2 ways the labs can analyze it, either nitrogen by combustion or total Kaldol nitrogen. And if you look at the nitrogen by combustion, it kind of looks like there's a little more variability. And again, this is that no flag percent. So these two examples, we would say that their results would be plus or minus 100 from whatever they give. That's a pretty high variability, and we'd say those were acceptable results based on the statistics that we use. But what's interesting, I think, is with solid manure, there really wasn't a difference, a statistically significant difference between nitrogen by combustion and the total Kelvol nitrogen method. They were pretty similar. But with the liquid manure, there's quite a difference. And there was not one instance where the nitrogen by combustion had lower variability than the total Kelvol nitrogen. So in every case, the total Kelvol nitrogen method for a particular sample had less variability than nitrogen by combustion. This is the closest one right here. And then after that, they kind of spread out. And there was a statistically significant difference. And it's a little bit concerning because labs are going more and more to the nitrogen by combustion methods for ease of use, I believe. But we're not sure if there may be just some old equipment that's kind of giving us some outliers that's not very good. We're starting to ask the labs what equipment, what model, and what manufacturer they're using, and hopefully we'll find that that's just a few old pieces that are giving us the problem. And if you put the two graphs together, you can see there's a lot more variability with liquid manure than with solid manure, no matter which method you use. So some future projects, I guess I'm going to be on time. We have opened a new, we call it the Clean Lab, and it's got kind of a funny name because I was originally planning to have the lab in St. Paul where I used to work, and they said that lab was too dirty for me, and I thought, I'm going to be doing manure, how could it be too dirty? But they thought I should have a cleaner lab. So this one is up in Staples, Minnesota, where we actually mix the samples. Unfortunately, that's about 180 miles from where I live, but someone will replace me and actually live up in that area and have more time to spend on it. But we did get this freeze dryer a couple of years ago, and we're just starting to get going on it. Next to it, there would be a ultra-cold freezer that would go down to about minus 20 or minus 30, so we would freeze these 2-liter bottles and flask and put them on the freeze dryer, and then this will evacuate the air and give us a nice freeze-dried sample. My wife was so happy that I donated a couple of my old sweaters to this program. We want to keep the flask kind of temperature controlled as they're being evacuated. So from the flask, we'll have a Retsch rotary mill grinder that will pulverize the manure and get it down. I think we have the finest sieve is a 0.5 millimeter sieve. And then we want to introduce, put them in different size capsules. And we think we can use this in a number of ways. It can take the place of possibly a proficiency sample. Bob and I have been concerned we only have 2 exchanges per year. We'd like to add another one. This might be a way we could add a low-cost third exchange. We'll have to see. But I think the biggest use might be for reference samples. And it might be that they'll just take it out of a bottle in bulk, but I think it might be more homogeneous to have it in capsules and just use that capsule for one test, whether it's Kelvol nitrogen or whatever. Now, I think some of the tests, they could actually analyze it with the capsule, but probably more often they would break the capsule apart, and they may want to add water to it to get, reconstitute it. So I think we could come up with a tailored set of manure from various sources. I think a lab could even send us manure that we could process and encapsulate for them that they could use as a standard reference sample.